We're now going to talk about approaching the prospect. We know that this is one of the areas where we have the greatest number of hang-ups. So I'd like to give you some key points in the initial approach. Once we've done our creative thinking, our creative analysis, we've identified our major competitive advantages, and now we have to go out and actually confront face-to-face or telephone call to telephone call a real live person who has never seen us before in our life. One of the most fearsome parts of all of selling until we get it down pat. An ongoing analysis of your product and market will give you a continuous stream of new products and prospect groups to call on. Remember, most sales calls end with a no because people are either busy, they're preoccupied, or they're initially disinterested. And your first contact with the prospect will begin the process which will or will not conclude with a sale. Therefore, every word of your approach or introduction must be planned in advance to accomplish the following. Number one, it must break the preoccupation of the prospect. Every single person, by the way, is preoccupied. We are completely involved in our own problems, our own world, our own health, our own family, our own business, our own bills. And there's a very good book that was written some years ago called Preoccupation Breaking. And what it simply said is this, is that unless you break the preoccupation of the prospect, you never get to first base in making a presentation. Many people start off their sales presentation while the other person is still on the phone, still signing checks, still shuffling papers, and their mind is 1,000 miles away. And your first job is to smash that preoccupation. And I like you to think of it in terms of throwing a brick through a plate glass window. Just think of going to crash through a plate glass window to get that preoccupation broken. Let me give you an example of one of the most successful preoccupation breaking approaches ever used. It was developed by a salesman at Corning Glass. The year that Corning Glass came out with safety glass. And he went out throughout the country and he became the top-selling salesman of safety glass for Corning Glass in North America. And at the National Sales Convention, he was given a big prize and an award. And they said, please tell us your secret. How is it that you sold so much more than everybody else? He said, it's very simple. He said, first of all, I got some pieces of safety glass cut into 6-inch by 6-inch pieces as samples. And I got a ball peen hammer. And then I'd walk in on the prospect and I'd say, you'd like to see a piece of glass that doesn't shatter. And the guy says, I don't believe it. I put the glass on the counter, and I go, whack, and hit it. And he'd protect his eyes. He'd say, geez. And he'd look back down. He'd say, holy smokes, that's incredible. And I'd say, how much would you like? And I'd pull out my order pad and start writing. Well, Corning Glass was so impressed with this that they bought all of their salespeople ball peen hammers and sample sheets of glass and sent them out, and they sold glass by the carload. The end of the year, next National Sales Convention, this salesman was still head and shoulders above every other salesman in the country. They brought him back again, and they said, what on earth have you done differently? Because we've done exactly what you did last year. He said, well, I knew you were going to steal my method, so I knew I had to come up with something more original. Now, what I do is this. I go in to see the purchaser, and I've got a ball peen hammer in one hand and the glass in the other. I say, would you like to see a piece of glass that doesn't shatter? He says, I don't believe it. I put the glass on the desk, and I give him the hammer. I have him hit it. And if you don't think that convinces him, I've got another thing coming. He says, then I write up the order. You see, a good opening, a good strong question aimed at the result or benefit of your product gets you almost all the way to the close. It gets the person alert, it breaks their preoccupation, they give you their complete attention, and they're willing to listen to you. You only have 30 seconds at the beginning of the approach to get the person's complete attention. In the first 30 seconds, the person decides whether or not they're going to listen to you. If you waffle, or if you're just friendly, or if you're easygoing, or if you hope that they've got some time to talk to you, within 30 seconds, they've turned you off and tuned out. So your opening question has to be planned word for word, rehearsed in front of a mirror, memorized and practiced over and over again. Then you have to go out and try it on real live prospects and see what sort of response you get. Let me give you an example. I used to sell sales training, motivational training. And I would call up somebody and I'd say, I'd like to talk to you about training your salespeople. They'd say, no, sorry, thank you, I can't afford it. We don't have the time, we're all busy, we've got all the training in the world. They've all been trained, they don't need training. Sales are down, business is bad, we don't have any cash, our budget is shot. Same things that they tell us all the time. So I found that I wasn't getting anywhere with that approach and I sat down and I looked at it. I spent several days, as a matter of fact, working and reworking and trying to think, how could I approach organizations with salespeople more effectively? And I came to an interesting conclusion. I said, what is the basic need of the person who determines whether or not there will be sales training offered in the company? Well, the person is usually the sales manager or the company owner, and his basic concern is increased sales, right? So I said, why don't I ask a question that focuses on that specific need? And I wrote out a question, and I started calling people for appointments. And my question was simply this. I'd ask the receptionist, who's in charge of sales training in your organization? Well, that would be Mr. So-and-so. So I'd get the name, and I'd get transferred to Mr. So-and-so, and I'd say, Mr. Smith, my name is Brian Tracy, and I'm with the Institute for Executive Development. And I wonder if you would be interested in a proven method that can increase your sales by 20 to 30% over the next 12 months. What kind of responses do you think I got? Every single one of them said, what is it? How does it work? When can you come in and see me? Because every single one of them was concerned about sales. Your opening question must answer this question. Why should I listen to you? When you have an approach question, it should answer the question, why should I listen to you? My question was, this is why you should listen to me, because I can increase your sales by 20 to 30% over the next 12 months. The next question, which should be generated by your opening question, is, what is it? Your opening remark should cause the person to say, what have you got? What is it? If it doesn't generate that response, then it's not a good enough question. It's not breaking the person's preoccupation. If the person says, well, I'm really not interested, it means that your opening question is not emphatic enough. It's not aimed at something that the customer wants. It's amazing how many people introduce themselves and their company and their product line and how long they've been in town, none of which is of any interest to the customer. And finally, the customer says, well, I'm really not interested. Thank you very much. So what you do is you drop everything and you focus solely on the key benefit that you think that person wants to enjoy. You're selling microcomputer products. You walk in, you don't say, do you currently have a computer? Are you interested in a computer? You say, how would you like to save $1,000 a month on your administrative costs? What's the answer to that question? What is it? That's right. How do I do it? For that, I'm willing to listen to you for a few seconds. Now, you may have something and you may not, but for that kind of a benefit, I'm willing to give you a couple of minutes. You've got my attention, sir. You see, and this is the importance of the question. As I say, 95% of people wing it, and they can't understand why they're so frustrated in their telephone and in their personal presentations. So moving on, your first selling job is to get the person to listen to you. And before the prospect will relax and listen to you, he wants to be sure of five things. He wants to be sure that you have something important to communicate. That's why you hint at the result or benefit in your first sentence. The second thing is he wants to make sure that you're talking to the right buyer. Now, you should have qualified by going through the receptionist or someone else to make sure you're talking to the right person. And if you have any doubts at all, ask them, are you the person that I would talk to about increasing sales in your organization? Are you the person that I would talk to about cutting costs of administration? Are you the person that I would talk to with regard to this particular benefit within the organization? And the person will say, yes, I am, or no, I'm not. But by all means, be sure you're talking to the right person. There's no point in doing a wonderful sales presentation to somebody who's not in a position to make a buying decision. You also want to be assured that your visit will be short. People are terribly busy today, and they become very, very uptight and nervous if they think somebody's going to take up a lot of their time. So you must assure them very early that you're only going to take up a couple of minutes to tell them about this benefit that you've suggested. They want to be sure that they will be placed under no obligation and that you will not use high pressure. So you have to do everything right at the beginning of the talk. And let me give you my method for doing this, which I've taught now to thousands of people, and they've tried it, and they have found that it has completely turned their effectiveness in getting appointments around, either by telephone or cold calling. It's very simply this. You ask a well-structured question, an imaginative question aimed at the benefit. Remember, when you have asked a question, the natural, habitual, conditioned response is that the person must answer your question before they say anything else. If you ask a person, what time is it, before they can say anything else, they are conditioned to respond and tell you what time it is. If you ask a person, may I ask you a question? Almost invariably, the person will say, yes. When you say, would you like to hear a proven method whereby you could increase your sales by 20 to 30% per year, the person has to think about that question before they can say anything else and give you an answer. I only had one person tell me no, by the way. No, I'm not interested. And the reason they weren't interested is that the receivers had just come in and closed the company down. And he said on the phone, he said, it's too late for us. I wish you'd called me 6 months ago. But every other sales manager I ever spoke to with that question said, yes, I'm interested. When would you like to come in and talk? So the next question is simply this, is be polite and respectful and say, I would just need about 10 minutes of your time to show you what I've got and you can judge for yourself. Now, it's very important because there's a lot of natural sales resistance, especially making a telephone appointment. The person's very resistant. They'll say, well, what is it? Can you tell me what it is? You say, Mr. Prospect, I would like to tell you what it is, but I have something I have to show you. and it'll just take me about 10 minutes, and then you can judge for yourself. You can decide for yourself whether or not it's the sort of thing that you're looking for. It's very important that you repeat this 2 or 3 times. You can judge for yourself. You be the judge. You decide for yourself. I just want to show you something that hundreds of other companies are using that are very happy with it. We're having tremendous success. You take a look at it. It'll take you 10 minutes, and you can decide for yourself. You've got to get that message across on the telephone. If you do that, you'll be all right. You see, anybody can give you 10 minutes. They can't give you half an hour before the month after next, but they can give you 10 minutes right away if you've got something that's of interest to them. So you say, you be the judge, I just need 10 minutes of your time. And then say, would tomorrow afternoon or the next morning be satisfactory? Or how about sometime today? Don't make the mistake of doing what many people do, saying, how about 10:30 this morning or 11:20 tomorrow morning? You don't give them choice of one time or another. You choose odd times. This is called the insurance company method of getting appointments. And everybody's heard it so many times that just the sound of it on the telephone turns them off, even if they're interested in your proposal. Just say, would you have 10 minutes free somewhere around 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon? If the person says no, you say, well, how about in the morning or how about the morning after that? But keep asking, how about the morning after that? How about the Monday after that? Keep asking until the person says, well, yes, you could come in around 10 or about 9:30 or whatever it happens to be. Just ask insistently for a time. Now, one of the things that happens here, which you must be very careful about in the approach, if the person has said, yes, well, I'm interested, I'm curious, I'd like to know what it is, I'd like to put aside 10 minutes, you have something you have to show me, in other words, you can't tell me what it is over the phone, all right, and then they'll say, well, why don't you call me next Monday and we'll set a time. You ever had this? Whenever they say that, say, look, I have my date book right here. Is yours handy? Now, you know theirs is handy because it's right there on their desk. You say, why don't we set a time right now? Now, every time somebody has ever done that to me over the phone, I just smile because I think that is so excellent. It's so professional to say, look, I've got my day timer right here. Is yours handy? Why don't we set a time right now? And they'll always say, why, sure, why not? And they'll set a time right then. Don't ever allow them to put you off until calling next Monday morning, because then you're into the same darn thing again. Set a time. Say, how about 9:30, 7:45, 5:15, whatever it happens to be, any time that's convenient for them, and then be there on time. And one final point is, before you go off for an appointment which you've scheduled a day or 2 days or more in advance, always call and confirm. Always call and confirm, because it's astonishing how many of our appointments fall through for no reason at all, but that the person gets called into a meeting or out of town or out in an emergency. Always call and confirm before you go. And if you call and confirm, the person says, geez, I forgot all about it. I'm sorry. I've got this other meeting that's come up. Well, let's schedule another time right now. Remember, the most important thing you do in telephone selling, in getting your appointments on the phone, is to get that first appointment and get it firmly scheduled and to get it confirmed, so that you go and see the person. Once you've had an opportunity with a prearranged appointment to sit down person to person, face to face, and identify the needs of the individual, you're a lot further along than if you're just on the other end of the phone. So do everything humanly possible and be insistent, polite, firm, friendly, smile into the phone. It's very important. You can feel a smile on the other end of the phone. You can also feel a frown or an intent look or anxiety or tension. You can feel it on the phone. So smile. If necessary, put a mirror up on your desk and smile into the mirror. As they say, an insincere smile on the phone is better than a sincere frown. So look into the mirror, smile, and keep insisting until you get that time so you can go and sit face to face. Never sell your product on the phone. Never try to sell your proposition. Never describe it. One of the greatest things that you have going for you when you say, I have something I must show you, something you're going to find very interesting, something's very profitable. When you say that, one of the greatest things you have going for you is curiosity. People are enormously curious. I had a person call me about financial services not long ago, and he left me with this, I have an original financial plan for you that I like to talk to you about when you get a chance toward the end of the year, and I'll call you and I'll get back to you. Now, the salesman never did get back to me, and I'm still curious about that financial plan. I'm still curious about that innovative approach to investment that the person has got, but they never called me back. Very, very important. You must be insistent. You must maintain the initiative. Don't ever expect people to call you back. You, as the salesman, must maintain the initiative continually until you get the first face-to-face appointment. And finally, never, never, never mail information if you can possibly avoid it. Brochures, information, material is to be left, not sent. That's the basic rule. If a person says to you, well, can you send me some stuff in the mail? Do you know what they're telling you in most cases? Is, Can I get rid of you this easily? That's all they're telling you. And you know how you can test if they're interested? Some people say, well, look, I'm going out of town or I'm going to be tied up. Can you send me some stuff in the mail? What you say is, look, I understand how busy you are. I'll tell you what. I'll be going past your office later on today or tomorrow morning. I'll drop it off personally. Will you be there? This is how you can tell if the person's interested. If they say, no, don't do that. Don't do that. No, just drop it. Don't just put it in the mail. What they're telling you is, I'm not interested. I'm just trying to encourage you to waste a stamp and some literature and take it from your office so I can throw it in the wastebasket in my office. And that's basically what they do. If the person says, well, yes, if you're going by, I'll be here, by all means, drop it off. Then they're interested, then you drop it off in person. But don't mail it. Has anybody here ever been in the situation where they've mailed the stuff and they thought, boy, now it should be there. The person's going to get it. They're going to read. Oh, are they going to be excited because they really asked me to send it? And you call them up and they don't know what you're talking about. They know that they're not telling you the truth. They say, yeah, it's here somewhere. I'm sure it's under something here. But tell me what it was again. You had that? We've all had that. Don't go into that. Unprofessional salespeople do this for what reason? To avoid the possibility of being personally rejected. Every single thing that we do to avoid the possibility of being personally told no is a waste of our time and will never lead to a sale. Remember that. Most of the efforts that salespeople engage in are to avoid coming face to face with a real life prospect that can tell them no. So nail down the appointment. Be aggressive, but be polite. Now, prior to a sales call, and by the way, before you get off the phone, you thank him very much and you reconfirm the time and date. 40 or 50% of the time, the person will have written it down in the wrong date, right there on the phone. You say, Tuesday, May 14th at 3 o'clock. Right? Right. So he's got it down solid. Thank you very much for your time. I'm looking forward to seeing you. You are really going to be happy with what I have to show you. In other words, build expectancy. Cause the person to be interested. The last thing you leave them thinking is something really interesting that you're going to show them. Then when you go to the appointment, you go in to see the person. This is perhaps the most important of all. And many top salespeople will tell you that they do this, but many of them keep it a professional secret. Is that before you go in, what you do is you stop for a few seconds and you get a clear mental picture of yourself completely relaxed, calm, positive, smiling, in complete control of the interview. You breathe in, you exhale, you just see yourself as a beautiful, smoothly prepared professional representative going in, and you see a picture in your mind of the prospect responding to you positively, and you think of your last successful sales call and sales close, and you think of that and let that be the last picture you put into your subconscious before you go in to see this new prospect. And you'll be surprised. It'll smooth out your whole personality. And if you're a little bit tense, you say, I like myself. I'm a great salesman. You just say that, or saleswoman, you say it very, very strongly. You really say it as though you're trying to impress somebody at 100 yards. And you'll do that, and you'll be surprised. You'll feel good. You'll almost be laughing at yourself. A salesman that comes in with a smile just disappearing from their face because they feel so good about themselves has a tremendous, immediate, positive impact on the client. Never go into a sales presentation without preparing yourself with visualization in advance. It'll make all the difference in the world. Once you get in there and you shake hands firmly, you say, thank you very much for your time. You are really going to enjoy what I've got to show you. Because we know that if you build positive expectancy, get them interested, get them curious, get them saying to themselves, I wonder what it is. And if you're smiling and you're confident and you're positive and you say, boy, you're really going to enjoy this. This is really neat. I'm really glad you had the time. I'm really looking forward to showing you what I've got. They're saying to themselves, I can hardly wait. It's been a lousy morning. It's been nothing but telephone messages and memos and complaints, and the coffee's been cold and the bills and the suppliers and everything else. Thank heavens, here's a nice, pleasant, intelligent, positive-looking person who's got something interesting to tell me. Believe me, many people feel this way. And if you're pleasant and smiling, they'll be happy to see you. Then you go in, refuse to make your presentation standing up. Never, never, never make your presentation standing up. Because if you do, you run the risk of devaluing your product. Nobody considers a product of any value if you're willing to sell it standing up, unless you sell in a showroom. But if you're going to see a person, they come out and they say, well, can you tell me what it's about? You say, what I have to show you is really very important and I need about 10 minutes of your time. And if you don't have the time now, perhaps we could schedule 10 minutes at a later date when it would be more convenient. But refuse to sell standing up, because what it does is it just cheapens your product. Very, very important. Many people forget this. The basic rule is this. If the person cannot buy your product standing up, don't try to sell it standing up. If they cannot purchase it over the phone, don't try to sell it over the phone. If they can't purchase it through the mail, don't try to sell it through the mail. If it requires your being there in order to sell the product, then make darn good and sure that that's the way you do it. And people don't make buying decisions standing up. They make buying decisions sitting down in their comfort zone, in their office or their home, listening, considering, reflecting, looking at your material, and evaluating and reviewing and deciding whether the benefits are worth the price. Let's talk about the power of suggestion. The suggestive influence of a calm, confident, relaxed salesperson is very, very powerful. As you know, the most professional salespeople are those who are the most relaxed. They're the most calm, they're the most easygoing, they're usually well-dressed, well-groomed, and they have a soothing effect on us. They exude confidence in themselves and their product, and therefore we feel confident about listening to them, we feel confident about the things they say, and we feel confident about their product or service. We know that we are very strongly influenced by our environment. As human beings, our environment has a tremendous impact on how we act and react. For instance, here, the temperature in this room is about 70 degrees. If you raised this temperature 5 degrees or lowered it 5 degrees, it would dramatically change the amount of attention that you could give this course, your level of comfort, your level of anger, your irritation, and so on and so forth. We also know that in our suggestive environment, one of the most powerful influences is the people that we deal with, that we are very, very strongly influenced by the way people respond to us, by the way people are when we're around them. Everyone here has had the experience of meeting a person and having an instantly negative reaction or an instantly positive reaction before a word has been exchanged. Isn't that true? We respond subconsciously to other people. So therefore, everything that we do prior to the sales presentation and everything about us in the sales presentation either increases the possibility of making a sale by creating a positive suggestive environment or decreases the possibility. One of the things which I'll point out is that in 50% of cases, lighting a cigarette will lose you the sale, for the simple reason that at least 50% of people today don't smoke and are offended by those who do. Many people don't realize that. And it's very, very important. So let's talk about some of the powerful suggestive influences. The first three key are appearance, how you look, your overall appearance, your voice, what your voice sounds like, and your attitude. Now, if your appearance is appropriate, your voice is loud and clear, as opposed to being low or shy or retiring, and your attitude is calm and positive, all three of which you can strongly affect, at least the second two you can strongly affect, by doing the visualization in advance, clearly preparing your mind, seeing yourself as a success, that will affect your voice and that will affect your posture and everything else. It's very important with your attitude should be positive, confident, and outgoing, and your dress should always be the best and most appropriate possible. I strongly suggest that men read Dress for Success by John T. Malloy, one of the best books on the subject. If you haven't read it and you're trying to make a living in sales, you are really hurting yourself, because that book is one of the finest that's ever been written on the impact that our clothing has on the decisions people make about us. There are several books on the book racks for ladies' Dress for Success. There's one by John T. Malloy, but from everything I've heard, I suggest that you not read it, that there are others that are better written by women. I've had several women who've read it, and I just pass that on to you. Friendliness is very important. Remember, people like to deal with people who they feel friendly toward, with one exception, that women should not smile at the beginning of a sales interview. That if women smile at the beginning of a sales interview, they run the risk of not being taken seriously. They should be friendly. They should be straightforward, they should be firm, but they should not smile. Men smile and shake hands and they're pleasant and they say something funny, and this is the way men are expected to interact with each other. But ladies should be serious, should be friendly, should be warm, but they should not smile until 5 or 10 minutes into the presentation. This comes out of some recent research and it's a very important thing to know. Grooming. Every salesperson should be well-groomed. I've given this advice to so many people, I'm astonished at how much I have to beat people with this. If the people in your industry have short hair, you better have short hair or go and sell to somebody else, because we feel uneasy. It moves us out of our comfort zone to deal with people who are too different from ourselves. We feel comfortable with people who dress like ourselves, who's groomed like ourselves, who talk the way we do, and so on. And I have a friend whose business career in the last 2 or 3 years I followed very closely. When I first met him, he had long, shaggy hair over the back of his collar. Like, he looked like a dog. You wanted to pet him, as a matter of fact. And I told him, I said, if you want to be successful in selling, you're going to have to cut your hair. Well, he insisted that that was not true, that people could like him for his own personality, that they should take him for what he was, and that part of his personality was his hair. And he struggled month after month after month. He pounded his knuckles raw trying to make a living selling. He finally went and cut his hair. He went through courses that I've given about 3 or 4 times. Finally, he got the message. He went and cut his hair. As his hairline went up, his income went up. He said, aha, I've made it. He started letting his hair grow again. His hair went down, his income went down. And so now when you see him, he's got his hair very nicely groomed, cut short, and he's doing very good business. He now has two or three people working for him, as a matter of fact, whereas before he couldn't even afford to pay his bills. Small thing, but it makes a big difference. Product should always be clean and presented in its best possible light, because people are very influenced by the suggestive impact of a product that is clean, neat, efficient, attractive, colorful. They're also influenced by a product or a product brochure that's dirty, dusty, dingy, got coffee stains on it, folded over, spilled, and so on. So always use the best material possible. Your surroundings, especially when they come into your office, should be neat, clean, orderly, and looking like success and prosperity. I read a book by a man who'd made several million dollars, and he said one of the key rules of success in his organizations was always keep your desk clean. People have a lot of trouble with that, but especially in sales and entrepreneurial organizations, we find that if we have too many things on our desk, we are always being distracted. It makes us incapable of concentrating on one thing at a time when our desk is covered with things. So keep your desk clean and neat. You should only have what you're working on your desk. One of the key time management rules is have one thing on your desk at a time. That's the thing you're working on at that time. Even if you have to take everything off your desk and put it on the floor in a stack and pick up one thing at a time. Presentation should be well organized, practiced, and complete with all details. Surprisingly enough, as much as 80% of the value of your product or service in the mind of the prospect will be contained in the quality of your presentation. If your presentation is random and wandering, the prospect will consider your product or service to be inefficient and incompetent. If your presentation is crisp and well organized and goes step by step in a logical development to a logical conclusion, they will think that your product or service is the same way. That's why when you go in to see a doctor, or you go in to see a dentist, or you go in to see a lawyer or an accountant, they don't just start off the wall talking to you. They have a series of questions, a series of pieces of information that they take, one after another in a very systematic order. And the more they ask you systematic, logical questions and take it down, the more confident you feel in their competence. So that's important. That's why we're talking about presentation. Body language. Body language is very important because why? Well, for the same reason that clothing is important, because clothing covers 95% of our body, so 95% of the first impression we make is going to be our clothes. Body language is important because 80 to 90% of all our communication with other people is nonverbal. It's not contained in the words that we say, it's the way we say them. It's the tone of voice, it's the gestures, it's the eyes, it's the set of the face. That's why a person-to-person contact, knee-to-knee and head-to-head, as the Japanese say, that person-to-person contact is worth far more than any telephone contact, because you can see all the nuances. You can see the person. You can see how they're thinking and feeling and reacting. You can see the eyes and the body language. So therefore, always stand erect. The best posture in selling, standing up as though there was a string and the string was holding your head up so that your body is completely straight, so your spine is completely straight. Sitting down, you should always keep your back erect sitting. Never fold your arms when you're talking to people, because it means that you're closing them out in many cases. And if a person has their arms folded, it's very important that you do something to get those arms unfolded. And one of the best things to get their arms unfolded is to hand them something that they have to take with two hands. Say, by the way, take a look at this, and hand it to them. They have to reach out with two hands. We find that if a person unfolds their arms, they unfold their mind simultaneously. If a person's arms are folded, their mind is folded. Very, very important. So don't sit there with your arms folded. Cross in your legs. What does cross legs mean? Cross legs usually mean that you're holding back information. Cross legs at the ankle means that. Cross legs over the knee means that you're holding back information. Some people sit like that because it's comfortable, but just be aware that cross legs is a bodily sign that denotes holding back, if you like, or constraint. Your best body language is leaning slightly forward, attentively, watching the prospect, listening carefully to what the person is saying, nodding and smiling, nodding and listening, because it's very, very hard for a person to resist a person who is listening to them closely and nodding and smiling and is obviously interested in what they have to say. And as you know, if your prospect will talk long enough, they'll probably tell you what you need to know to be able to structure your offering so that they'll buy it. So that the more you can lean forward, the more attentive you are, the more you listen, the more you nod, the more you smile, keep your back straight, never lean against the back of a chair. Why is that? Well, because when you're leaning against the back of the chair, you're slouching. We find that there is a psychological process in selling, or in all human relationships, called mirroring. And mirroring means that whatever you do on an ongoing basis, other people start to do too. That people will begin to mirror your behaviors. If you lean back in a chair and slouch comfortably, the other person will lean back and slouch comfortably, and a slouched back, lean back, relaxed prospect is not going to make a buying decision. If you lean forward attentively, put one hand on the desk, pay close attention to what the person is saying, smile and nod and listen and ask questions, the other person will lean forward also. Very important. And body language can be as much as 60-70% of the communication. We always believe what a person does more than what a person says. And if there is variance between what the person is saying and what they're doing, we'll always believe what they're doing. As they say, have you ever heard of a person who smiles only with their mouth? The eyes don't smile? Now, what happens when you see a smile like that? You feel like the canary in the cage looking at the cat, don't you? That's why body language is so important. That's why, by the way, the more you like yourself, the more goal-oriented you are, the more motivated, the more you're selling a product that you believe in, the more animated and positive and enthusiastic your body language is, the greater the impact that you have on the subconscious mind of the customer. Noise, always try to minimize the noise in the selling environment. If the person is coming into your place of business, try to make sure that there are no interruptions. If you're going to the other person's place of business, try to suggest that we sit down quietly where we can't be interrupted for 5 or 10 minutes. Sometimes if you'll ask the prospect, say, I just need 10 minutes. Is there somewhere where we could sit where we won't be interrupted? Very often the prospect will say, well, sure, why don't we go over here? They'll do it. And not only that, when they get into the habit of responding to your reasonable requests, they'll eventually start responding to your other reasonable requests, like buying the product. Positioning is very important. I always try to position myself so that I'm sitting to the left of the prospect. If you're left-handed, then you should sit to the right of the prospect. But there is sort of an uneasiness about having somebody on our right hand. I think it goes back many, many years into our history where the right hand was the sword hand. We don't like people to be on our right hand, but we do like them on the left. And if you're sitting to the left of the prospect, have the person's wife or partner sit to the right of them so that you can talk to both of them and make eye contact with both of them, and they have difficulty making direct eye contact with you. Try to avoid barriers like tables and chairs. One point, when you're selling in a person's home, it's very important that you do not make your presentation in the living room. And the reason for that is that couples, families, do not make business decisions or important family decisions in the living room. It's out of their comfort zone. They make them at the kitchen or dining room table. That's where they talk business. So although you'll be invited to sit in the living room, what you say is, why don't we sit at the kitchen table where we would be more comfortable? The person who you're talking to will be more than willing to say, sure, why not? Because that's where they feel more comfortable too. When you get to the kitchen or dining room table, have them show you where to sit. Because you don't want to sit in Mama Bear's chair and you don't want to sit in Papa Bear's chair. Again, if you do, the other person will be uncomfortable. They will feel that their space has been violated. It's a small thing, but nobody ever buys anything or makes a serious business decision sitting in the living room, or very, very seldom, let's put it that way. And finally, with regard to etiquette, always be extremely polite. Always be extremely courteous. Be extremely considerate with prospects and their wives, their employees, their partners, their receptionists. Be known as the person that when you leave, people say, what a nice person that person was. What a gentleman or what a lady or how nice that person was. Because very often we find salespeople make the mistake of being kind of indifferent toward the receptionist or the secretary, and then later on they find they can't ever get back in again. Always treat everybody as though they were special. One of the basic rules of selling is to treat everybody like a $1 million client, like a $1 million prospect, and you'll never go wrong. Okay, the approach close. This is a very, very strong close that you can use in approaching a customer, and the purpose of this close is to get the person to agree to make a decision after you've made your presentation. Rather than saying, well, let me think about it, let me talk it over with someone. And the reason you do this, by the way, is that sales resistance, what we call generalized sales resistance, is at its maximum height the first time the salesperson and the prospect meet. The person in the back of their mind is determined not to buy anything. And you are determined to sell something. And this is where the greatest resistance is. So you deflate this resistance by saying, Mr. Prospect, I'm not going to try to sell you anything right now. All I want to do while I'm here is show you some of the reasons why so many others have bought this product and continue to buy it. And all I ask is that you look at what I have to show you openly and honestly and determine whether or not it applies to your situation. And tell me at the end of the presentation whether or not, yes or no, this is applicable to you. Okay, is that fair? What you've done is you've offered a deal. The deal is, I won't try to sell you anything if you'll listen with an open mind. Invariably, the person will take the deal. They've got nothing to lose. So they say, okay, that's fine. I'll just listen to some of the reasons why others have bought. But there's also a very strong suggestive influence here. I'd like to tell you why thousands of people have bought this product and continue to buy it and are so happy with this product. All I ask is that you listen with an open mind and tell me one way or another if these reasons apply to your situation. Is that fair? Almost invariably, the person will say, sure, why not? That's fair. You say, good. And then you go on and you give the presentation. At the end of the presentation, you have the psychological advantage, because if the person says, well, I have to think it over, you say, well, Mr. Prospect, you know, you promised you'd tell me one way or another if this applied to your situation or not. And from what you've said, it seems that it does, unless there's something else that I don't understand, which forces the prospect to give you a reason or an objection which allows you to go on selling. Remember, if you don't have any objections, you can't go on selling. The person says, well, I want to think it over. Or, no, thank you. You can't sell against that. You've got to get a reason. And you have the psychological advantage if you use this close. So I strongly suggest that you memorize this, because you can use it with almost any product. You create expectancy right at the beginning. And the second close that you can use in the approach is the demonstration close. And the demonstration close starts off with a very strong question aimed at the chief result or benefit that the customer or prospect would enjoy should they buy your product. And we used to use this in mutual funds, where we'd call up somebody, and notice how well this works. And sold millions and millions of dollars of mutual funds with this. Mr. Prospect, if I could show you the best investment available in the market today, could you invest $5,000 right now? The person says, well, I don't know. And see, what you've done is you've changed the whole basis of the discussion, not to, would you listen to what I have to say, but how much will you invest if I have what I've promised in my opening question. He says, well, I don't think I have $5,000. You say, well, could you invest $3,000 if it was the best investment that you'd ever seen? The person would say, well, if it was as good as all that, I could probably invest $3,000. You say, well, now let me explain to you just exactly what we've got. He has given you permission to give your presentation and to prove whether or not you have the best investment, or the best deal, or the best offer, or the best combination of features and benefits, or whatever it happens to be. At the end of the presentation, they cannot say, I'm sorry, I don't have any money, which is what most of them do. I'm sorry, I can't afford it. Well, if it's cookware, if it's insurance, if I could show you the most comprehensive insurance policy to protect yourself, your home, and your family, at perhaps the lowest price that you could possibly get it for, would you be in a position to make a decision right now? If I could show you a method whereby you could increase your sales by 20 to 30%, are you in a position that you could act on it right now? The person says, well, yeah, all right. If you could show me a method, I'm in a position I could act on it right now. Then it's simply your job in your presentation to demonstrate that what you have to offer will fulfill the opening condition. The person has said, if you've got what you say, I'll take it. At the end of the presentation, they can't say, well, I don't know, I've changed my mind, I can't afford it, I have to talk to somebody else, because they've already said that they're qualified to make a decision right now. And finally, buyer personality types. With regard to the true psychology of selling, there are five personality types, and it's important that we identify them and we recognize them. The first of these is the apathetic. The apathetic represents about 5%. The apathetic is the negative, cynical person who's never going to buy anything. They don't care how good it is or how cheap it is, they're never going to buy it anyway. You run into these people occasionally. They're down on themselves, they're down on life, they've been cheated or made mistakes so many times that they just don't care what you have to offer. If you were offering them a $100 prize for $5, they wouldn't buy it. I had a person who was selling a product, and the product was $295, and it was an excellent product, and the person was perfectly qualified. They needed it, they could afford it. He said, we kept saying, well, it's too expensive, it's too expensive, it's too expensive. And finally, in exasperation, he asked him, he said, what if I gave it to you for $200? He said, it's still too expensive. He said, how about $100? He said, well, I couldn't afford it. He said, how about $5? He said, I still wouldn't buy it. This is the apathetic buyer. When you meet these people, extricate yourself as politely as you can and slip away and go after someone else. These are about 1 in 20. On the other end of the scale, you have the self-actualizing buyer. The self-actualizing buyer is very different. This man or woman knows exactly what they want, knows exactly what they're willing to pay, knows exactly the specifications, and if you have it, they'll take it right now. Thank you very much. Will that be cash or charge X? It's as simple as that. And every so often in selling, 1 in 20, 1 in 30 times, we run into one of these people. And the sale is so easy, we say, geez, if I could do that all the time, I'd be a rich man or a rich woman. Isn't that correct? Well, These are 1 in 20, and when you're selling the self-actualizing buyer, always sell them exactly what they want. Don't try to sell them something else or different or change the specifications. You might give them some additional information, but don't try to talk them into something different. If you don't have what they want, then tell them that you don't have it and suggest where they can get it. Your other three categories of buyer are, first of all, what we call your analytical buyer, which represents 30% of the market. This is a person who is low on the relationship scale and low on the task orientation scale. This is the person who does not care about getting the job done so much and does not care about the people who are involved. All they care about is the details. They are very specific. They're called thinkers. They like to consider very carefully. They want to know every single nut and bolt. They want to know every single penny and every single percentage point. And they ask an enormous number of questions that are picky, picky, picky. They are accountants, they're bookkeepers, they're controllers, they're administrators. They're people who don't make decisions in a hurry. They're very slow to make up their minds. They need to be left alone with the material to reflect on it. And when you're talking to them, the thing that makes them the happiest is detail. The more detail you give them about how the product works, what it costs, how it performs, how it will be serviced, and so on, the happier they are. They love details. They can sit and study details, charts, graphs for hours, and they just love them. The more details you give them, the happier they are. The more general statements, oh, it's a great product, everybody's using it. That's the kind of statement that makes them very, very uneasy. If you say, it is an excellent product, it's graded 8.9 on the consumer scale, and there are 2,326 people now using it west of the Lakehead, then they say, aha, that's the sort of thing that they relate to. And then they want all of their names and phone numbers. The next type of person is the relationships-oriented person, another 30%. These people are very concerned about people. They're concerned about how people think and feel, how people will react, how people will respond, what people's opinions will be. They are hypersensitive about the opinions of other people. And these will be personnel people, psychologists, nurses, teachers, school teachers, social workers, young people. Many, if not all women, are very, very into relationships. And when they come to buying a product, their primary concern is its impact on other people. If you're selling them an office product, they want to know how it will fit into the existing situation, how happy the staff will be using it, what its colors are, whether it will be difficult to learn, who is going to have to adapt or adjust to it. If you're selling them a house, they're concerned with how it will affect other people who will come and visit the house. If you're selling them clothes, if you're selling them cars, their primary concern is other people's responses to it. These people like to talk a lot. They like to really talk out the product or service. They like to develop a relationship with the person selling them. Sometimes with the analytical buyer, it'll take you 45 minutes to go over your presentation. With the emotional buyer, they may want to spend 2 hours and then come back and spend 2 more hours just to relate, just to feel really comfortable, to get their mind around you and around the new product or service. The third type is what we call the entrepreneurial, practical, task-focused buyer. This person is very direct. This person wants to get right to the point. They are very businesslike. They want results. They want practical outputs. They want to know how much it's going to cost and how much they're going to get and how can you prove it and what's my guarantee and let's get on with this because I've got to get back to something else. They don't want any small talk. They don't want chit-chat about fishing in the hockey game and so on and so forth. They want to know now what you've got and they've got to get on with it. So when you deal with this type of person, which are primarily entrepreneurs, sales managers, business managers, people responsible for output, production managers, foremen, and so on, when you deal with this type of person, get right to the facts. They'll lead you quite quickly. The analytical buyer will want to know about the details. They'll be looking to see what you've got to show them that they can read, that they can analyze, that they can check on. And the practical buyer will be fidgety, and he'll be trying to do 2 or 3 things at once and will want you to get right with it. Now, the very best type of salesperson is what we call the integrated personality. The integrated personality is one who has the qualities to be able to deal with all three. As it happens, each of us has, as a dominant personality style, one of these five. In selling, we tend to lean toward being emotional or practical, if you like, and some of us are self-actualizing, but every one of us has one of these as a dominant style. And our biggest mistake is that we slip into our dominant style and we talk to each of these three major types of buyers in terms of what interests us rather than what interests them. The ideal is to step back from the sales conversation, ask questions, listen, observe, pay attention, read between the lines, and figure out what type of person you're talking to, and then structure your answers and your presentation to satisfy their needs rather than your comfort level. biggest mistake of all. Tom Hopkins, in his book, How to Master the Art of Selling, says right at the beginning that each salesperson should really have three basic presentations, one for each of the basic personality styles, so that you know how to slip into detail, if you like, how to slip into being friendly and gregarious and outgoing, how to slip into a very efficient presentation for the practical, task-oriented buyer. The second phase of the selling process begins when the salesperson and the customer have established a certain degree of rapport. One of the things that we know is that we don't ever start selling until we have become friendly with the person that we're talking to. Some people, it will take an hour to establish that rapport. In selling very expensive, sophisticated products with long life and long installation time, sometimes it will take 3 or 4 or 5 one-hour visits just to get to the point where there is enough of a relationship established so that you can talk business. For instance, in selling telecommunications equipment, smallest bill is $35,000. Equipment's built to last 10 years, runs the whole company. If the person makes a mistake, they're probably going to be out of a job. And the person making the purchasing decision doesn't understand telephone electronics. So they have to have a very good feeling for the person who's making the recommendations. And they want time to talk, to go out for lunch, to talk over coffee, to talk about 1,000 things until they feel comfortable with that person. But generally speaking, we cannot begin to sell until we've established at least the beginnings of a friendship with our prospective customer. The approach or opening question we talked about before begins the first stage of qualifying the customer. The first thing we do when we call the customer up or see them is we ask them our opening question. The answer to that tells us at the beginning whether or not they're in the market for our product. If I could show you the best car at the best price that you've ever seen available in this city right now, would you be interested? The person says, no, I just bought a car and I don't have any money left. Then there's no point in trying to carry on and sell them. The opening question is to get them to qualify themselves as being at least partially a candidate for purchasing this product. And the purpose of the presentation is to further qualify the prospect and to discover the key reasons why the person might buy. In other words, the key benefits. You are now becoming a detective. The presentation is not to show all the information about your product or service. That's very, very wrong. The purpose of the presentation is by showing one piece or one feature or one benefit at a time to find out which of these benefits are of greatest concern to your prospect. That's all. And if you have 10 things listed in order of descending importance, what you consider to be the most important characteristic, then the second most, and on the second most, the person jumps up from his seat and leaps across the desk and throws their arms around you and said, bless you, thank God you've come. You don't sit them down and say, well, now let me go through 3 and 4 and 5. You begin selling. In other words, you found the hot button, you begin selling, and you begin closing on that particular hot button. It's really important, and it's amazing how many salespeople, person says, oh, really? How does that work? Hey, that's really neat. I've never seen one of those before. That's something that we need around here. Oh, yeah, it's one of our features, and let's go on down the list. Sometimes, if you can find the right feature, you're ready to go in for a close right away. I used to have a friend who sold mutual funds, and he sold millions of dollars of mutual funds. And he showed me his presentation once. Actually, he had a presentation that had 32 closes in it. He'd say, Mr. Prospect, and he'd draw 2 circles. He said, if you put your money in First Federal Savings and Loan, you can get maybe 5%. This was some time ago. He said, if you put your money into a well-managed mutual fund, you can get about 15% per annum on your funds. He said, now, which of these two would you like if you were going to invest $1,000? The guy said, well, I'd like this. He said, good, okay, let's sign it up. What's the exact spelling of your last name? He'd start filling out the application form. People would say, wait, but it was so obvious. Of course, this is what you like. And if people had money in a savings account and they were getting 8, 9, 10%, he'd say, well, how much are you getting in your savings account? Well, they'd say 9%. Now, which would you like, 9% or 18%? Referring to a mutual fund that has a 5-year track record of 18% compound. He said, well, I like this. He said, fine. He said, do you have your checkbook with you? And he'd just start filling it out. The person would have to stop him. He said, I like it. I want it. That's what I want. I'll prefer that. And it was very, very successful. I mean, the presentation, he could be into the close within 30 seconds of starting it. One of the things which I didn't mention, with regard to selling, you should always, when you are selling tangible products that the person can make a judgment on in the presentation, you should always aim to get a decision the first time. The reason for this is that if you are mentally predisposed to calling once and then calling back, you will be mentally prepared to let the person off the hook and to walk away. So you should go in there determined to close the first time. The other type of product, let us say the intangible or the more professional product, you are unprofessional if you try to sell and close on the first call. Usually what you have to do is you have to make the first visit to find out what the needs are of the customer and then ask him and arrange for an appointment to come back after doing an analysis with recommendations. But you will know what category your product falls into. But if your product falls into the first category, then have in the back of your mind and in the front of your mind, you are here to close the first time. You're here to get a decision now. If it is an intangible product or a professional service, then have it in the back of your mind that you are only here to get information and that you will come back and close at a later time. For instance, in the insurance industry. The insurance industry always uses what they call a two-step. The first step is simply to interview and to find out what the needs and situation of the customer is or the client is, and then they go away and they prepare a proposal and they bring the proposal back and that's when they sell. Isn't that true? And it's the most effective way of all because the salesperson is not in a position to make a recommendation until they've had time to consider the information that they get in the first interview. The planned presentation is 20 times more powerful than the random presentation, and all sales professionals and all top money earners and all people in the top 4 or 5% use a planned presentation. All of the low money earners, all people in the bottom 80%, all people who sweat bullets every payday and worry all month long about their bills, go out and wing it every time. The planned presentation is very logical. It's a step-by-step process of teaching and learning. You start and it begins with your opening question. And from your opening question, you then go through a process of showing the prospect what your product does and what it can do for him. You go through what is called a feature and benefit presentation. You say, here is what the product does, and here is what that means to you. This is what's in it for you. In other words, we've put in this new piece of equipment into this machine, and it has decreased the price by X percent and increased the output by X percent, and it costs the same as the previous machine or as our competitor's machine. In other words, here's the benefit for you. Sometimes you build a case. In other words, you start off with one piece of general information and you go to a second piece of information and you're building a case and you gain acceptance of the validity of each step as you go along. For instance, let me give you an example with selling sales training material or motivational material. Mr. Prospect, would you like to increase your sales by 20 to 30% over the next 12 months? We'd say, yes, I would. So we'd say, okay, let's set that as our goal, 20 to 30% sales increase. And we'd say, now, Mr. Prospect, you realize that the higher the motivation, the higher the level of sales. Isn't that correct? Yes, that's correct. Now, what is true motivation? Well, true motivation comes from an enhanced feeling of competence. Isn't it true that people are more motivated when they feel more competent to do their work, and they're less motivated when they feel less competent? Well, that's true. So if they got skill training that made them feel more competent, that would increase their abilities by, say, 10% per month, over the course of the next 12 months, and they went up 10% in effectiveness each month as a result of better skill training and time management, effective communications, creative thinking, closing sales, and so on, do you think that over the course of 12 months, taking one course a month, learning, practicing, coming back, reviewing, developing, and growing, that you could achieve an overall increase of 20 to 30%? The person would say, well, sure, it seems logical to me. You say, well, what date would be convenient for you, April 5th or April 17th? And how many people will be attending the first course? You notice an interesting thing that happens here. By the way, this is roughly the way the presentation worked. They'd say, well, probably April 17th would be better for us. And they say, hey, wait a minute, how much is this going to cost? In other words, the concern about price doesn't even come up in a good sales presentation until the very end of the presentation. If price is coming up at the beginning of the presentation, in almost every case, it's because the salesperson has allowed it to come up. In most cases, if your presentation is correct, the issue of price does not come up until one of the last questions. So if the presentation is developed in a logical order, you teach the prospect how his needs will be met with the product, and you learn from the prospect which are the key benefits or key needs that the person needs to have satisfied. Remember, if you go through your product presentation and the person keeps giving you feedback and information, says, well, we've got one of those and we don't need that and we're very happy with our situation in that area and it's doing fine there and there's no way that we could afford a different product and so on. They get to the end of your presentation and the person has not stood up and saluted and said that you have a benefit in your product that we need, then you're not in a position to close. This is why the best sales schools say that the real close takes place in the presentation. If you have made a good presentation and the individual is convinced that your product is going to give them benefits that far outweigh the costs, then it's just simply a matter of wrapping it up at the end of the presentation. The best way to qualify the prospect is by using planned, open-ended questions that elicit specific information. Before product information can be presented, a need of the prospect must be determined. As you can see here in this example, I keep coming back to this. You want to increase your sales by 20 to 30% over the next 12 months, don't you, Mr. Prospect? Mr. Prospect says, yes, I do. In other words, we have determined the need. Now the whole conversation focuses on showing how your product or service can fulfill that need. If you're selling blueprinting services, if you're selling industrial chemicals, if you are selling weightlifting equipment, if you're selling building supplies, then you must uncover the need and spend the whole presentation demonstrating how the need will be satisfied. With regard to effective selling, the most important skills to develop in most cases are good listening skills. We said earlier one of the great needs that human beings have is to be listened to by others, to be listened to attentively, to be paid attention to be considered valuable, to be respected. So there's five keys to effective listening. Number one is face the prospect directly. Lean forward, listen attentively without interruption, without trying to leap in and tell the prospect the next thing that comes to your mind. Professional listeners, professional salespeople listen calmly as though they have all the time in the world, and if this person wants to speak for 8 hours, they would love to hear every single word of it. And I mean it, this is very important. Your professional people are very much like doctors. They have a bedside manner. Professional salespeople have a bedside manner too. The second key is pause before replying or continuing. When the person finishes speaking, pause and wait for 3 to 5 seconds before you answer. And then answer thoughtfully. Answer in as concise language as possible, but avoid the tendency to leap in. The person gives you a question that you know you have the answer to. Pause for 3 to 5 seconds. What does this do? More than anything else, it tells the other person that you're carefully considering and weighing what they have said, and you consider what they're saying valuable. If you just leap in and answer the question quickly, the person thinks that you are paying no regard whatever to his concern, or her concern for that matter. So pause before continuing. Use silence to encourage the prospect to talk. Sometimes if you sit quietly and just wait, the prospect will continue talking again. As the prospect continues talking, keep nodding, keep smiling, keep listening, keep leaning forward, listening intently, listening carefully to what the person is saying to you. Question for clarification. If the person says something that you're not sure of, say, how do you mean? How do you mean that exactly? If the person objects to a particular aspect of the product or service, say, how do you mean? How do you mean, I have found, is the most powerful question of all to encourage a prospect to elaborate and clarify their concerns and objections. It's an almost impossible question not to answer. Very hard for a person not to answer, how do you mean? And number four is relax, take it easy, stay calm. Focus your attention on how you can help this prospect get something he or she needs. Number five, use closed-ended questions to help the prospect give a firm answer. Now, an open-ended question, as we said earlier, starts with what, where, when, who, how, and why. Closed-ended questions, when you want to get decision, always start with verbs. Are we on the right track so far? Does this make sense to you? Are you in a position to act now? Can you see how this would be an improvement on your existing situation? All questions that start with verbs require a yes or no answer. Almost all. Whereas all questions that start with pronouns, who, why, what, where, when, and how, require an open-ended answer, if you like, not a yes or no. If you want to open up the conversation, you use who, how, when, where, what, and why. If you want to close the conversation and start moving toward some kind of an answer, you use verbs. And you'll find it's very simple to do so. And you should always have this planned in advance. If a person, for instance, gets off the track, starts talking about fishing or baseball or something else, you can say, well, should we get down to business? Or something like that. Using a verb, it requires a yes question, it requires a firm answer, a specific answer. The presentation methods, and there's a whole series of them, but I'd just like to give you some of the best ones. Remember, first of all, that a presentation should move from the general to the particular in a logical order, as we said about that, the ascending close. Present your product features in order of descending importance, most important to the least important. Number two is get the prospect involved and keep him involved. We know that a prospect that's sitting there like a lump of stone, listening to you or watching you go through your presentation is not likely to say yes when you're finished. We find the very best salespeople are those who are active. They move, they talk, they use their hands, they use their face, they use gestures. They give the prospect information. They take the information back. They get him to calculate things. Now write this down, for instance. Or they sit next to him and they write things down and they ask him questions and get him to answer it. Get the prospect moving. If you can get the prospect to get up and come and sit at a table, come and sit in another office, come and sit at a coffee table while you make the presentation, all of these actions, getting the prospect involved, help him become more loosened up, if you like, and more amenable to making a buying decision later. If he sits there without moving through the whole presentation, you can be sure he's not going to move at the end of the presentation either. And one of the things which I have found, which has been very helpful, and I learned it 20 years ago, is that if a person's sitting there with a big desk in front of them, and you're trying to make a presentation across the desk, ask the person if there's somewhere that you could sit, where the person could sit next to you, so that you could give them your presentation. If they say, well, this is all we've got, say, do you mind if I come around there and pick up the chair and drag it around the desk and make the presentation from behind the desk? Do you know, I learned that from a brilliant salesman when I was in my early 20s, and what he said was, it seems a little bit odd, but nobody will ever say no to you. And you know, I've used that with senior executives, chief executive officers, presidents of large corporations. I said, do you mind if I come around there and explain it to you? In my whole selling career, I've never had anybody say no. It's really interesting. And once you're on their side of the desk, in their territory, they're far more relaxed, far more comfortable, and far more open to your presentation. Use visual sales aids. They're 15 times more powerful than words. Remember, telling is not selling. The average attention span of the average prospect is 3 sentences. Once you have told 3 sentences in a row without asking a question, showing a picture, giving an illustration, demonstrating a benefit, 3 sentences in a row, and the person is gone. Remember, the average person thinks at about 400 to 500 words per minute. The average person speaks at 100 to 150. If you are speaking, the person has 2/3 of their time to think of what they were thinking about before you came in. And so if you're not asking questions, if you're just talking, you're not selling. Telling is not selling. Telling is not selling. Only asking questions is selling. The really skillful presentation is one where you take every single important piece of information that you have and structure it into the form of a question. Or at the very least, present the piece of information and then ask a question which requires a response. Information, benefit, ask a question. Information, benefit, ask a question. And begin trial closing very early in the presentation. The trial close is one of the most powerful of all closes. It's called the check close. And you use this throughout the presentation to get feedback from the prospect on how well you're doing, whether you're on the right track, whether you're talking about something that interests them. And some of the trial close questions that you can ask are, does this make sense to you so far? Is this what you had in mind? Would this be an improvement on your current situation? Or are we right so far? Or does that make sense to you? These are all questions that get the person to feed that back. For instance, you say, we have this in 3 beautiful colors, burgundy, chartreuse, and green. Which of these do you prefer? The person says chartreuse. Well, you don't keep talking about the other colors. You just go on from that point. If you say, now this will turn out something like 500 copies an hour as opposed to the standard model, which is only 250. Is it important to you that you have a lot of copies in a short period of time? The person says, no, we never turn out that many copies at a time, so it doesn't make any difference. You say, fine, thank you very much, and you keep going. Remember, all you're trying to do is find out, through detective work, what are the benefits that you offer in your product that are most important to the client. And when he says no to an individual benefit, all he's doing is giving you feedback, but he's not saying no to the entire offer. He's only saying no to that particular feature. The difference between experienced salespeople and inexperienced salespeople is that they dump an avalanche of information on the prospect, and they keep talking and talking and talking and talking until they've got the whole presentation out, and then they stop. The professional salesperson gives one piece of information and asks a question, gives another piece of information and asks a question, and gives a third piece of information and asks a question, and is always getting feedback, always keeping the customer or the prospect alert, interested, and involved in the presentation. The power of suggestion close is also very neat. It's used throughout the presentation to plant seeds of readiness in the customer's mind. Remember that people think and make decisions based on stories and word pictures. We take in information in a logical form, but our brain can only hold a certain amount of information or data, but our brain can hold millions of pictures and stories. So the very best salespeople are those who are always painting word pictures around their product. For instance, some of the examples, you're selling a car. You're saying you're really going to love the way this car handles in the mountains. What happens? The person sees and thinks of the car handling in the mountains. Or you can say, you're really going to enjoy living on such a quiet street. It's just beautiful here. There's not a sound in the evenings. Lovely houses. I'll give you an example of a question that we developed for a real estate company. They put advertisements in the paper to get interested buyers. Right? They put advertisements on all the houses they have listed, but also other houses to get interested buyers to call. When the buyers call, they say, I saw your ad in the paper. Now, what they want is an opportunity to talk to these buyers, to take the buyers out. They don't want to turn the buyers off. Normally, buyers just call, and they say, how much is that house? And then you say, X dollars. They say, thank you very much. Click. And it's over in 5 seconds. So this is what we taught them to say. They say, well, I saw your ad in the paper. You say, Mrs. Prospect, this is so-and-so of XYZ Real Estate Company. Tell me, are you looking for an ideal home in a quiet neighborhood? And the person says, well, as a matter of fact, we are. They say, well, we have two or three homes that have just come on list that aren't even in the paper that might be really interesting for you and that are priced very, very attractively. When could we get together to take a look at them? In other words, they ask a question, are you looking for an ideal home in a quiet neighborhood? Now, who do you know who is not looking, if they're looking for a house, for an ideal home in a quiet neighborhood? Who could say no? If they said, no, we're not in the market at all, I'm just checking prices for my Aunt Mary in Suskabush or whatever it is, then fine, they've disqualified themselves. But if they're in the market at all, they'd say yes. And you say, well, we just happen to have two or three that aren't in the paper. Perhaps you'd like to get together and take a look at them. They're very reasonably priced. Well, it's unique, they're reasonably priced, they're not in the paper, nobody knows about them yet, and they're ideal homes in quiet neighborhoods. Well, so the power of suggestion close is just like that. It's a variation of talking past the sale using emotional, creative images. Like, for instance, you're talking about your business, and you're saying, you know, you're just going to love the service that you get from this company. One of the things that I think is best about this company is that when we get an order, it's turned around in 30 minutes, and bang, we get it out. All of our customers love the fact that if they put in the order at 3 o'clock, they can sometimes have it back at 4, or whatever it happens to be. You're going to love the quality of the materials that we use in this, because even though it doesn't cost anymore, it sure makes a difference when it's in your office or you're showing it to your customers or whatever it happens to be. So create vivid, colorful pictures as though the person is already using the product. You're talking about a photocopier. When you have this photocopier in your office, you're just going to love the way it performs. It's quiet, and it'll sit right over there against the wall, and you'll put in the copy, and it'll pump out 20 copies in a minute and a half, and you won't even hear it. And not only that, it's going to be so much cheaper and easier to run because you're not going to have repairmen in here servicing it all the time because it almost needs no service at all. So you're creating a whole bunch of images, repairmen running in and out, your images of fast, quiet copies. They're actually seeing the copy or sitting over there at that space in the wall. And sometimes they say, well, we wouldn't put it there, we'd put it over here. Well, all right, let's put it over there. Against that wall or that wall? We'll probably put it against that wall, and you start writing up the order. Remember, people think in terms of pictures, not in terms of statistics.